Again, welcome to the meeting of the new TLD applicant group, NTAG. We are going to go around the room and introduce everyone, but based on the size of the people here, I think it would, present company excluded. Based on the number of people in the room, we figure that will take too long. So essentially, we're just going to launch into the meeting. My name is John Nevitt. I'm from Donuts. I'm the chair of the NTAG. And why don't we just at least introduce the officers?
Tim Switzer, Dot Green, the treasurer.
Bill Dozier, Dot Strategy, vice chair.
Krista Papik, Aremi Group, secretary.
Thank you. So we formed the NTAG, I guess it was about 6 months ago, when we decided that new TLD applicants needed a voice in the ICANN process as a group. And we thought as a group we would be stronger than individual applicants raising their hands on policy issues. So we got the group together, and it's been incredibly successful in the growth. As I mentioned in the last meeting, we now have approximately 80 members and about 900, representing about 900 strings. And more than 50% of our members have one applicant members, and more than 75% have five or fewer applications. So diversity of business models. We have geos, brands, IDNs, large portfolios, and everything in between. So we've been growing every week. We are open to every applicant. So any applicant who wants to join who hasn't joined yet, we are under the auspices of the registry stakeholder group. So essentially, once we have contracts, that's where we figure we will end up anyway. And they helped us create an interest group under the registry stakeholder group. And NTAG is an interest group, and you have to be a member of the registry stakeholder group, and then you could join NTAG. It's a $500 annual fee, and every applicant is eligible. So I encourage every applicant in the room who is not currently a member to join and help us have a voice in our futures here at ICANN. We've been really active and prolific. We've, I think, have done more than any other stakeholder group or constituency that I could recall. And this is my 25th ICANN meeting, I think. We had, six letters and position statements in the last 6 weeks, 7 weeks, something like that. And it's not easy to get consensus of a group this size with different business models, but we've been really good about tackling the issues that we can tackle. And there are certain issues that we just won't achieve consensus, and that's fine. And each applicant is obviously always free to voice an opinion or make a statement on their own. So something like batching or metering, that might be a little more difficult based on business models and different interests. You know, it's harder to get a consensus on something like that than it was on having a clearly defined objection period, for example, which was one of our last statements. So we'll have some quick business of the NTAG just to move forward, and then we'll have some substantive discussions, and I'd like to thank ICANN for sending representatives to talk about our guidelines that they are under in dealing with applicants. So Sam, thank you for coming. And so we'll just go through the agenda. The agenda is up on the screen. Yep.
Tim Switzer, just one more thing referencing the NTAG and what we've been doing. Also, every 2 weeks, we have a conference call, very regular agenda set, and it's the off week when the registry stakeholder group is not doing their call. So we've had regular calls on an ongoing basis as well.
Okay. Thanks, Tim. And Bill Dozier has been incredible in getting out a monthly newsletter that many of you probably have received numerous times, either by mail or even in person here. And we have copies up here if anyone wants. Maybe we should leave a stack over down there so people could peruse that while we're having the meeting. Anyone is free to participate in the meeting. It's open to all. So if you have any questions or comments and want to get in the queue, just raise your hands and we'll accommodate you. So If nothing else, we'll move forward. We have minutes that were circulated of our last call that Krista circulated. Are there any comments, thoughts, questions about the minutes from the last meeting of October 10th? If not, any objection to approving those minutes? Okay. Those minutes are approved. Next quick business is we have a number of charter or amendments to our charter. We originally had one-year terms for the officers, and we reduced those to 6 months based on the short duration of our, hopefully short duration of our organization as we become actual registries, as well as we knew that there would be a lot of growth in the organization, so we didn't want people that were joining late to be bound by elections that were held with a smaller group. So we would like to reduce the officer terms to 6 months from a year, and we need a certain number of people to vote, a certain number of members to vote for that. And I think we're six votes. We have unanimous support, but we're only, I think, six or seven votes short. So if there are any members in here who are willing to vote, please let Krista know, raise your hand, send an email, please do something so we can get that order of business done. Just so everyone in the room knows, as far as voting goes, every applicant has an equal number of votes, regardless of the number of applications they've placed with ICANN. So Donuts has the same number of votes as Doc Green. And we thought that would be the fair way to do that for this organization. And then, assuming that we have enough votes for the charter amendments, we will have new officer elections in the next month or so. The terms under the amended charter, again, assuming it passes, will end the end of the year. So sometime in late November, early December, we'll have elections for new officers. And then we'll move on to number three on the agenda, which is ICANN communications and support. One thing we've asked for in a number of our communications with ICANN was more information and better information. And these monthly webinars are helpful. We've asked for dashboards. So in between the monthly meetings, you know, what's the status of initial evaluation? How many have been done? And instead of getting stats never, now we're getting stats once a month, which is great, but we're asking for it a little more regular than that. We've also asked for a liaison from ICANN, and they've been really helpful in working with us on that. And so you heard from Carla and other ICANN staff members who are helping us out and working with us. And then we also asked for, we were informed that there were guidelines that ICANN staff and ICANN board members had in their interactions with applicants, do's and don'ts, and we were never informed of the details of that. So we've asked ICANN Legal to come and just give us an overview of what are the do's and don'ts. I think it would be helpful for both the staff and board members as well as for us as applicants. We don't want to put anyone in an uncomfortable position. We want to know what our rights are, but we need some little more guidance on the guidance. So Sam is going to give us an overview. Thanks.
Thanks for inviting us. I'm Sam Eisner. I'm senior counsel with ICANN. And at the Dakar meeting in October 2011, we announced and gave some details about guidelines that we had just introduced about staff interactions regarding the new GTLD program. And just to clarify, these guidelines are directly applicable to staff. They can be advisory in your dealings with the board, but the board has its own separate code of conduct that doesn't necessarily specifically reflect new GTLDs, but these are good guidelines to keep in mind when you're dealing with the board. The focus of the rules and the goals of the rules are really to reduce an appearance of conflict of interest, to promote uniform communications to applicants and the community as a whole regarding the new GTLD program, and to create expected standards of conduct for ICANN employees. And so we can see this really as a tool for all of us to use so that neither ICANN employees or any of the applicants get caught up in any sort of suggestion that there's been improper influence or improper access or preferential access among any applicants, or more particularly, access to information that is not uniformly available to applicants. So I know as the new GTLD team has been working hard, and we just heard in the applicant in the applicant update session about how they're attempting to put out information, try to think about how they can give information to the group as a collective whole. That's part of the underlying message of this work. So at base, it really is that we want to make sure that the communications between ICANN employees and not just new GTLD applicants, but anyone else who's trying to talk to us about the new GTLD program, because we know that there are those who are very much in favor of the new GTLD program. That's, you know, everyone sitting in this room mostly. But then we also have those who are not so happy about the program or about specific parts of the program. And so it really is about lobbying in any instance relating to the new GTLD program, if it's for or against, or really asking for information about the program. We want to make sure that uniform information is given and that we can help control the channels of communication, because not everyone within ICANN, even when they're wearing an ICANN badge, knows everything about the program, or they might not be the correct person to talk to on the issue that you're discussing. So one of the first things that we did is we set up a chain of really who are the appropriate people to discuss matters with and about the new GTLD program. So, you know, if you have communications inquiries, you go to the communications department of ICANN. If you have legal-related inquiries, those go to the legal department of ICANN. And then we have a lot of the content owners. And for those of you who have attended ICANN meetings or seen who gets up and speaks on various items within the meetings related to the new GTLD program, those are really your main holders of content, right? And so even if you came to speak to me about a specific issue, I don't know everything about the program, so I would try to get you to the right person. Because we do want to make sure that everyone has access to the right information when we're giving it to you. If it is something that I have information about, what I would then do is try to bring in one of my colleagues into the conversation. That way we make sure that if someone were to come back later and say, oh, well, you told me this, you told me that, you know, we have just a second person witnessing the conversation, and it's not about needing to create a defense, really, but really it's making sure that we have an adequate record of knowing what we're talking about. It also puts a conscious reminder in the ICANN employee's head that we shouldn't just be having one-off conversations about the new GTLD program. The issues that we're discussing here are far too important to leave it up to the opinions or the conjectures of any individual employee. And so we do want to make sure that the information we're giving you is correct and done in a really protected manner. And so one of the ways that you can assist us is if you have a question that you'd like to ask someone about the new GTLD program, one of the things you could do is say, hey, can you grab one of your colleagues? I really want to talk to you about something. And it doesn't necessarily have to even be a colleague who's involved with the new GTLD program. We encourage all the staff to, you know, if they need to just grab someone by the arm and pull them into a conversation, to do that. We want to keep the channels of communication open. We just want to keep them open correctly. The other side of the new GTLD rules, particularly going to the appearance of conflict of interest, has to do with meals, gifts, expenses. So we do have a policy that applicants or anyone else who's interested in lobbying in the new GTLD program should not be giving gifts to ICANN employees, even if they're of a very small amount. We just created a bright line rule, no gifts. In terms of meals or expenses, you guys may recall, for those of you who were in attendance at the Dakar meeting, there was some community backlash about what we introduced there called the no Coke rule or the no Coca-Cola rule. So we created another bright line rule that as we entered into the new realm of new GTLDs and the heightened focus on conflicts of interest and ethics within ICANN, that it made sense just to draw a line that we're not going to be able to accept, or it's really discouraged to accept, even Cokes or coffees from you guys. We encourage ICANN employees to spend... So there are some exceptions to this, though, right? So if we're at a meeting and we have Coke out and it's generally available to everyone, we're allowed to drink it, right? But it's really about those types of interactions that we don't want ICANN or you guys called into question for it. It's not just about protection of ICANN. It's really about protection of the program that we've all worked so hard to develop. So, you know, if something happens that you wind up buying a Coke for someone, the world won't end, right? But it's just something to be conscious about in your interactions. And so if you're out at a meal with an ICANN employee, they're not trying to offend you if they say, let me pay for my portion. It's just what we've asked them to do. And so if you have any questions, I'd be happy to talk about anything else.
I'll take it. Got a cue. I've got one on Adobe. Catherine Douglas. Catherine? Okay. Tim?
Tim Switzer. So just to really kind of clarify this, what you've just said, I know for the most part ICANN wants to funnel questions on new GTLDs through the customer support process. But what you're saying is, if in fact we do want to call a member of the staff, we can call them up, get that question, and it'll be handled carefully. But that can happen. Is that what you're saying?
So, to the extent you have a question that you feel like you really need to pick up a phone and talk to someone about, what I would suggest to do is send an email and say, "I have a question for you. It's about the new GTLD program. Can we have a call?" And that way, the person who's on the other end knows to grab someone, bring them into the call.
Tina?
Tina Dam. Music. So this is both for John and Sam, I think, or maybe all of you guys. I think it would be really nice if we could document the communication that goes from NTAC to ICANN. So I know, Sam, I think you were talking about this communication, like generally from any of us to you guys. But from NTAC as a whole, I think we need to have it documented. So either it will take place on one of the calls, or it will be, you know, on some archive email list that all of us would have access to.
Yeah, all communications from NTAG are documented. We have a website where every NTAG communication to ICANN is published. And we also have, as I mentioned, Bill's been putting out a newsletter. So any communications that come out in that month, he's linking to it and talking about it in there. So I think we got that part covered from an NTAG point of view. Krista?
This is Krista. Just building on that, ICANN's also posting our correspondence on their correspondence page. Some of it's on the new GTLD correspondence page, and some of it's on the correspondence page.
Okay. Any other questions for Sam? Anyone? Don't be shy. Okay. Thank you.
And if there are things that you feel like you need clarification about, stop us, ask us. We want these to be workable rules that don't keep ICANN staff from doing their job and don't keep you from accessing the information that you need. So clarify at any time. We're willing to.
All right, we have two last-minute questions. Adrian?
Hi, Adrian Kitteris, and I'm not sure who we're representing, but anyway, who is it? Somebody. Our own application. Quick question. We've got a party tomorrow night. We've invited all ICANN staff. I think it's fantastic that you're bringing this in. I will personally go around and ensure that they do not drink for the evening. So
again, if it's a party that's open for general consumption, we are allowed to drink at it. So thank you.
All Adrian's parties are open for general consumption. Krista?
Thanks. Just a quick question. Sam, you mentioned that some of this information was came up in Dakar. Where could we access that? Because that was a long time ago, and I don't remember.
We were actually trying to figure out earlier today where the discussion happened. I think some of it actually was included in Rod's opening remarks in Dakar. And then I know that we had either at the public forum or possibly at an ethics and conflict session, I believe that John Jeffrey got up and maybe gave some explanation about it. But we can take a look through and see if we can find it and send you guys the link.
Please.
Hi, Sam. May I ask a question regarding a completely different topic, but, you know, as you are ICANN legal, perhaps you know the answer. When it comes to the contractual negotiations with the new, with the, you know, approved applications, this will be dealt by ICANN legal or will be sent back to Jones Day or any other external law firm for the negotiations?
So this is one of those questions that I am not fully able to answer for you, so that we'll get that funneled through legals to get better information out to all of you about that.
Just call a colleague and I will repeat the question if you prefer. And I do confess, in 1999 I bought a bottle of beer to one ICANN staffer. I hope that has already prescribed it in 13 years.
Yeah, just for the record, if everyone, this is John Nevitt, if everyone could just say their names before they speak, that would be helpful. Dan Halloran?
Yeah, this is Dan Halloran, also with ICANN staff. I'm a deputy general counsel, and I work with Sam. And to answer Amadeo's question, we're expecting, and there could be up to, I think, 1,400 contracts. Many of them will just be, I accept the base agreement, and that'll be done, but we could have, we don't know if it'll be tens or hundreds or lots that will be negotiating them. And so ultimately, you'll be negotiating with ICANN. We have a small legal team. We can't handle, 1,000 contract negotiations at once. So we will bring in outside firms. But I won't say right now it's any one firm. We might use different firms. But we'll be shepherding the whole process and managing it.
Thank you, Dan. Okay, if no more questions, thank you again, Sam. Appreciate it. Thanks for coming. The next thing on the agenda is the applicant survey. So one of the work groups, we set up so far 8 or 9 work groups. One of the work groups relates to an applicant survey. So before I turn over to Jacob Malthaus, who's coordinating that project, I wanted to do a little survey here. How many people are applicants in this room? So that makes sense, vast majority. How many people are members of NTAC? So big chunk, that's great. And those of you who didn't raise your hand on the second time but raised your hand on the first time, see Krista. So Jacob.
Thanks, John. Jacob Malthaus with Big Room. We're a .eco applicant. And this process has been ongoing for some time. We began coordinating comments in response to ICANN's initial request for comment around metering and batching. And a number of applicants expressed an interest in understanding the views of the applicant set as a whole. And as we started to discuss as a group, and this is one of the things the NTAG has been really useful for, it became clear that there was a common understanding that the size and scope of the new GTLD process as a whole, the fact that there's over 1,100 applicants for new GTLDs, many of them represent large entities in and of themselves, there was potentially a wealth of information to be gleaned from reaching out directly to that subset of the community and understanding what their perspectives are on the process so far. And actually, you can see where the value is from this type of push research, which ICANN just did with the clarifying questions, understanding which questions are good and which ones aren't and why, and surveying those groups. So this is basically an extension and grow out of that process. On the team, we had Elaine Pruse, Yasmin Omer, and Tim Johnson, and myself, and we worked to collaborate and pull together a 3-page proposal, which was sent to ICANN on, October 5th, if that's right, Krista. And it did achieve consensus within the NTAG. Basically, the goal was to understand the opinions regarding implementation and communication issues around this process and to help better inform the community as to the feelings of applicants as to how it's gone so far and how it should go in the future. So that's some background, and I'm happy to turn back to the chair with any updates from ICANN on the process going forward.
Thank you. Maybe if anyone from ICANN staff wants to maybe weigh in on, I don't know, Kurt or Train. So we sent a letter related to surveys of applicants and how that could help the process. I'm just wondering if maybe you have a response.
Sure. So we want to support your efforts, and so we just want clarity, and we could do it in this room or outside. So it sounded like remembering the letter and signing what we were just talking about. Would the NTAG provide the content of the surveys, and then we would sort of be the administrator of them, or rather, would you be looking for ICANN to write the comment? I'd have a few concerns about the latter, because we might create some content and then not fulfill your needs and do a survey and waste our time, and you know.
Jacob, do you want to respond? Or?
Yeah, I think in the proposal we'd envisioned a dialogue back and forth, so we extended an offer to assist ICANN as desired as a group in crafting survey questions. There were a number of example questions that were put forth in the proposal, so I think we'd be well open to assisting ICANN in developing the survey going forward.
You know, there's alternative solutions, and I don't particularly like these things, but there's, you know, wikis and other forms where we could help establish a wiki or create a wiki on the an NTAG wiki on the ICANN website or something like that, where there could be it wouldn't just be a survey, but it could be sort of interactive for you to correspond. So if you want, we'll make it more active, and Trang and I'll take it with Jacob and whoever else.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to suggest. Why don't the group that worked on the survey get with you guys, set up a meeting if you have time, and hopefully here, if not shortly after the meeting, and see what we could do together.
Just remember, every minute not spent on evaluating applications.
It's Krista, really quick. Who should they coordinate that with, you directly, Kurt or Trang or?
Hi, Krista. Happy to coordinate that with you. And again, essentially, I think the concept is good. We just want to explore, is this the right mechanism to do it? So.
That sounded like a volunteer to me. Thank you very much. Okay. Welcome, Akram. So next on the agenda, we have some timeline issues. The first issue, I'm going to skip to B, actually. We had asked in two different letters for an intersessional meeting, especially for the GAC to get together, and they said they needed a face-to-face meeting to provide their advice. So we had asked for ICANN to support an intersessional meeting for the GAC to get together, where they could discuss the GAC advice on specific strings, and to the extent any advice would be forthcoming, we as an applicant community would know about it earlier. So that's an outstanding issue. Other people have recently raised the idea, knowing that the clearinghouse still has some issues to work through, and URS has some issues to work through, and there might be one or two other issues to work through before we could go live with TLDs, that maybe we have an intersessional meeting during the six-month lag between this meeting and the Beijing meeting. Perhaps ICANN can sponsor an intersessional meeting where we could work through these new TLD issues, so some kind of a new TLD summit. There's some precedent for that. 2 years ago, we had an intersessional meeting with the GAC in Brussels to work through the scorecard issues. So I know there are some people who have been talking about that, and that's a suggestion. We have not taken a formal position as an NTAG on that type of intersessional meeting, but in two letters we have taken a position on an intersessional GAC meeting. So I suspect we might be able to get a consensus on that, because we're all incented to move this forward as quickly as possible. So I throw that out there. If there's any discussion, we could have it. If there's any response, we could have that. If not, I suspect there'll be a proposal in our next correspondence asking for that, maybe coming out of this meeting. Adrian?
Hey, John, it might make sense as far as timing is concerned to do that around December and have it in California.
Yeah, I mean, location and timing, December, January, somewhere in the six-month lag, you would think month three or four.
Did you get where I was going with
Yeah,
that?
I get it.
Okay.
I apologize to my friends in the Southern Hemisphere.
No, that's not... No, I was actually...
Right?
Sorry, yes, normally I am...
Yes, very
North
sensitive.
American, yes. But on this occasion, I was being fair dinkum, as we say in my country, that it may well... If you're going to do one, why not try to link it up so that it incentivizes everybody to maybe kill a few birds with one stone, that's all. I was actually being serious.
I got it. Yeah, sorry. During the drawing period is what you're thinking. I thought I said winter at some point, and you got offended by that.
Sorry?
I thought I said winter or summer. And
you're right. I would have got offended if you said that.
Exactly.
Especially if you said fall, because what the hell is that?
Mr. Despain.
I'll shout. Oh, no, good, it's working. Hi. I just have a question. Could you just maybe clarify what your goals would be? What would you hope to achieve in that with the GAC intersessional meeting?
Well, yeah, there's the goals would be a number of goals, I guess. The first goal in our prior conversations, the GAC sent a letter, as you know, that said we need a face-to-face meeting in order to work through these advice issues. And we won't be able to do that essentially till Beijing, which is the next face-to-face meeting. So we could provide them the opportunity to have that face-to-face encounter before that and perhaps move the goalposts, to use a football euphemism, a little closer. Goal one. Goal two is we know that we have issues in implementation still outstanding. We had a URS webinar not that long ago. We had a trademark clearinghouse small meeting in Brussels not that long ago. So there's still issues to be worked out. And we all know that this community works more efficiently and more, I think, more effectively when there's a meeting upcoming and that people know there's a deadline and have to get things done. So the goals would be provide that incentive to get it done quicker and have a face-to-face meeting where we could roll up our sleeves if necessary and get those final things through the process. So I got a queue. I've got Adrian, Ken, and Jeff. Oh, Chris, if you've got
sorry,
a follow-up.
If you wouldn't, just so
yeah.
I can get clear.
Yeah.
So I get the meeting for you guys. That's fine. I just want to be clear whether you're suggesting that there is an intersessional GAC meeting or you're saying an intersessional meeting with the GAC.
We were suggesting an intersessional GAC meeting
okay.
where they could do their work.
Right.
At the same time, we could do our work.
Cool. Thanks.
Yep. Adrian?
Yeah, and I just wanted to add to that. The reason why I think we're asking ICANN to at least offer an intersessional forum for the GAC, especially after hearing Kurt today with respect to the timeline for new GTLDs, that it's linked to when that advice is published. And so now that is a key driver for us. And so we're a little, at least my company is a little nervous now that we've seen GAC blow out timelines before. They're promising that they're going to hit their timeline this time, but I think it's a good insurance policy to try to give them as much face time as possible. So to respond to Chris, I think that's probably one of the goals from this group is to ensure that the GAC has every opportunity to succeed, given that we're all dependent upon them.
Thank you. Adrian, Ken?
Yes, Ken Stubbs. It's my understanding, and if I'm incorrect, please let me know. My feeling is that the GAC would like, if the GAC would be agreeable to do something like this, I'm assuming that they would prefer to have a meeting away from any possible distractions in terms of lobbying and so forth. would the group be amenable to recommending to ICANN that, if necessary, the intercession would be held for the GAC to allow them to optimize the time period to move forward? Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about new TLDs, the only operational role the GAC has is to provide early warnings and provide advice. So if we had a meeting separate or together, whatever is more efficient from a community standpoint, that I don't think that would be objectionable. Jeff Newman?
Thanks. Jeff Newman with we have an application in for .newstar. With respect to the clearinghouse, and I know we may talk about it more in subject D, but I would just say that we need to resolve that within weeks. Waiting till December or January is too long, too late. And so we'll talk more about it a little bit later, but I just want to throw that out, that any intersessional meeting in the winter or summer would have to be focused on other topics. The clearinghouse will have to be resolved, but way before that.
Yeah, probably certainly at the high level, but there might be some details that still need to be worked out. Presumably, you would think that may. If not, great. We'll talk about other issues. There'll be other URS and other issues. Tim.
Tim Switzer. I guess I would just add, for what's been said already, that I support this intercessional meeting on both fronts, from the GAC and the new GTLDs. As we all know, there are a lot of topics right now that are still kind of in play on new GTLDs. There is this big six months plus really between the ICANN meetings. So the idea of getting together, and we can really kind of take it as almost as a, you know, super webinar, where it can be a webinar, but it can be where folks can participate remotely. But I think, as we all know, getting together face-to-face, we're much more productive. And there are a lot of topics that I think, again, in the spirit that John said, of trying to just keep things moving forward. So just a voice of support for that.
Thanks, Tim. Any other comments on intersessional meeting? Okay, moving on. Objection filing. So just the lay of the land there is, there was an announcement that the objection period would end on January 12th, 2013. There was a letter from one constituency that said we would like that extended. And then this group, on behalf of the applicant community, or at least on behalf of this group, said we don't think the objection period should be extended, and that the January 12th date is more than enough time to lodge objections against applications that have been out there and known since, I guess it was June. And then we got the ICANN announcement last week that said the objection period will be extended till March. It's a bit of a split the baby type proposal. We're not going to go as far as requested, which was till after initial evaluation results are all done, but we are going to extend it a couple months just to give potential objectors a little more time in figuring that out. So that's where we are now. So as a group, the question is whether we should or need to respond to the March 12th extension, the 60-day extension. Chris?
I'm sorry. I don't want to hijack your meeting. I just want to come back to this GAC thing again because it's really important. I have a concern. I think you need to be really careful. There is no formal process in this GTLD process for GAC advice on specific new GTLDs. The GAC can provide advice on public policy matters at any time. Okay, so the formal processes are that there is ability for a government to lodge an early warning. That's not a GAC early warning; it's a government early warning. There is a process for governments to object if they want to object, and some governments might choose to try and take a string into the GAC and have the GAC come out with consensus advice that string should not be granted. I would be very concerned about doing anything that seems to be making that a formal process.
Actually, Chris,
that will be picked up on as GAC has a veto.
Yeah, well, Chris, there's actually...
That's
not really right, because in the guidebook, there's a formal role for the GAC to provide advice. There's actually a higher standard that is given. Let me finish. Yeah, if there's a higher standard in the guidebook that says any GAC advice on a specific string that's provided in the time frame, and the time frame is actually defined as during the objection period, which might end in January, might end in March, we don't know.
Right.
But if they provide any advice, there's a high standard that says that ICANN would follow that advice. So this is actually in our contracts with ICANN, our what we call our application agreements, where we paid money and signed up for this.
Yes.
There is actually a formal role for the GAC. If they choose not to do it in that time frame, then, however, we may, as a community, say, you shouldn't get that high standard. You shouldn't get that. The burden of proof should switch back.
Yep.
So that's where we are. We don't want to go down that road. We just prefer that the GAC provide its advice in a timely basis as required in the guidebook.
No, and I agree, and I'm not suggesting they shouldn't do that. It's just that there isn't a process for it. So I'm just a little wary about creating one, that's all. But I absolutely agree. I know that's what the guidebook says. I just didn't want to, and I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I just want a sort of little flag in case we end up with a problem because of it.
Yeah, that's helpful. Thank you, Chris. Any other? So, Tina.
We're back on objection filing, right? So to me, that you're asking for feedback on the proposed extended timeline. So for me, I think that is completely tied with the proposed lottery, right? So I don't, because that has to do with when ICANN can release the initial evaluations. So for me, I don't really see much of a difference when that deadline for objection filing is, unless we at the same time talk about release of initial evaluation and lottery.
Yeah, they essentially decoupled those two issues to make it clear that, for example, if the objection period ends before initial evaluation results are published, applicants would then have the ability to withdraw and get the higher refund amount. So there's incentive for applicants to know that they are being objected to by a certain segment of the community, and then have the ability to make a decision based on that objection or not. So, you know, we in the past have certainly argued that the 7-month period in the guidebook was the right way to go, and having that before initial evaluation results are published makes more sense from an applicant standpoint, and even from an objector standpoint, because then they have the more. I guess there's more likelihood that the applicant that they're objecting to will withdraw because of the higher refund amounts.
So maybe I misunderstood Kurt this morning or earlier today, because I thought that the proposed extension would still be prior to release of initial evaluation.
That's
so
correct.
It's just
it shouldn't matter. The only question is, in that 2-month period, could those objections be resolved in that 2 months and not move on? You know, if you have 30 days to reply to an objection, and then it's got to go to some hearing or something, there's lack of certainty for applicants in that point where once initial evaluation results are published, then you're moving on along the process. So we could get this done before that whole process starts with pre-delegation testing and the other factors that go into weighing and reviewing the applications. If we could do this earlier, we're better off as a community. But you're right; it's a 60-day period, and it's okay. All pre, IE results.
Yeah. Okay. So that makes a lot of sense to me. So I have a different question for you then on it. How do we work as a group into making, do you guys draft up a suggestion based on feedback, or and then we vote on it, or how do you go?
Yeah, what we've been doing is, if it's a formal request for comments, we draft up the comments, put it on the list, and actually have a formal vote. If it's a letter, what we do is draft up the letter, put it on the list, and try to get consensus. If anyone objects, then we'll put it to a formal vote.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks. All right, I've got Jordan, and I got
thanks, John. I think it's probably worth saying something about this, the timeline in the new proposal. I think the extension of the objection period really doesn't make particularly much sense to me. I wasn't that troubled by the request to extend it, but the rationale for extending it in the first place, they wanted to go after the initial evaluation results were published, so they wouldn't have to file objections if in the event that the application didn't pass initial evaluation. This just extends the time period, which makes us unhappy, does not actually achieve the goals of the people that requested the additional time, and doesn't actually, it doesn't seem to serve any function. So, you know, if they're going to change it, it should be a useful change as opposed to what we have right now, which is just an extension of time, which is takes certainly away from us without addressing the concerns of the people asking for the extension.
Yeah, well, one of the arguments they used in extending it or asking for an extension was that they needed more time to prepare, which you could take or leave depending on your perspective how long it should take to prepare an objection. Amadeo?
Amadeo Webril from CORE. We don't have hard feelings about when this should end. I mean, January or March, I mean, why not? As Jordan said, one of the main goals was for some people to have that extended beyond the publication of the evaluation. Again, we don't have hard feelings about that because that was the initial intent. That was what the guidebook said. But we also have the impression that 99.9% of the applications will pass evaluation. So it doesn't change a lot. Where we have a specific point, as CORE and as many of our customers in the community-based steel group, .Swiss, .Sport, and many others, is that it's one specific case in which objection period should be extended, and it's the case of community priority. That is, when you have community priority, that is community TLDs with honest string and others which are not, that at the same time some people would like perhaps considering making an objection, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to make the objection before the community priority is resolved, but you cannot object anymore when it's resolved if it doesn't work the way you expected, be that the applicant or a third party. And I think that only in this case, which are not many cases, it really makes sense, it is needed to extend the time frame. For the, on the other thing, I really would not spend much time opposing the extension between January and March because it doesn't change a lot. And if some people believe that preparing an objection, and clearly community-based objections and limited public interest objections are hard to prepare and to answer, you know, granting a little more time, it doesn't change a lot.
Thank you, Amadeo. So instead of extending the objection period, perhaps we encourage ICANN to get the community evaluation panels to announce those results earlier. I have Jeff and then Yasmin.
Thanks. Jeff Newman again. I would sort of agree with the previous two speakers on I'm not sure. You could say in your letter that you'd like the date earlier for the objection period, but I'm not sure you're going to get anywhere with that. I think what you have to be most concerned about is or are the comments that are going to be sent in from others saying, I thought it was 2 weeks after initial evaluation results came in. So I think you want to counteract that. Instead of asking for that objection date to be moved in to January or back to January, focus on making sure that the date stays in March as opposed to 2 weeks after. So it's a more positive way to spin it, saying I recognize that others are asking for more time, and therefore we're okay with this date so long as you commit to us that you're sticking to this date no matter what.
Thanks, Chef. Yasmin?
Thanks. Kurt, if you could provide some clarity on whether the objector and applicants have to proceed to the dispute resolution phase before or after the release of initial evaluation results, because I think you mentioned during a webinar that where an applicant receives an objection, they may elect to, where both parties agree, they may elect to proceed to the dispute resolution stage, or, as per the normal process, they would have to proceed to the dispute resolution phase after the release of initial evaluation results.
Is Amy here? I think the objection process has pretty strict timelines, right? That whenever an objection happens, if it were to happen now or the day before initial evaluation, the first initial evaluation results are posted. That starts an automated clock that sets in time. You know, you have to answer within a certain period, and then there's the reply, and then there's the adjudication. So the timeline starts from the instant the objection is filed, and the applicant wouldn't wait until the evaluation results are posted.
Okay. Any other comments on objection filings? Okay. If not, we'll move on to C, I guess, is initial evaluation. Now, obviously, we have this new proposal. There'll be a session on that. Is it Wednesday? Wednesday. Thanks, Kurt. So there'll be a session on that Wednesday. We'll get a little more guidance on the draw and how that'll work and any concerns with any aspects of that proposal. So I'm not sure we should take a lot of time in this meeting to talk about that, but I think certainly our first meeting after this, or maybe on the list, we should be discussing that. And if there's any major issues that people want to raise now about the draw proposal before the session on Wednesday, we could do that. Feel free to come up and raise your hand. We could do that. Otherwise, we'll reserve that issue to Wednesday as a broader group. Jordan?
I'm just curious, if we do reserve that conversation until Wednesday and we think it's appropriate to develop some sort of NTAG position, presumably that's not the right forum. Would we have to wait, presumably, till our next call before we really got into that dialogue?
Yeah, we'd have to do it on the list or wait till the next call, but it's kind of hard to formulate a position. We could. We have a lot of ICANN members here. Thank you all, actually, for being here. I should have said that earlier. But if people have questions, feel free to raise them, or we could wait till Wednesday, or if there are some burning issues, we could raise them now. We have 1 hour left in this meeting. We only have a two-hour meeting, unlike the full stakeholder groups where they have a full day on Tuesday. So question is whether we take the time. And ICANN staff members, if you have any questions for this group or looking for any guidance or any initial input, feel free to raise that as well. Okay.
So this is Kurt. So there's the paper includes like a use case or an example, but I would encourage you to go through some scenarios and kind of test how you understand the process and see if there's any sticking points or something that's not described, you know, if we have to flesh out with additional detail or make the additional decisions. And I think the best way to get at that might be to do your own, like, scenario testing or example testing. You know, if an application leaves New York at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, and that sort of thing.
So we set up a group. It was Team 2 for batching, sequencing, and metering. And it sounds like maybe that group should reconvene and get together to do that kind of analysis. That might be a helpful way to go. And if anyone wants to join that group, feel free to, I guess, let Krista know. John Toland is the coordinator. I don't think he's here in person, but he just sent me a text, so I think he is online. And he's the coordinator of that group. Amadeo, then Jordan.
Now, I'm Adobe from CORE once again. I don't want to discuss about the drawing issue. I don't like it, but I am hopeless about changing that at that point of the stage. So anyway, more especially, I think that we will not manage to all agree on what's the best way to do that. But I would like some meeting from now that CORE will submit a proposal to at least have some specific rules like there is now for IDNs for some applicants, and I make very clear that I only use the cases in which we have no direct or indirect customer interest or partner or whatever. But I really think we need to do something to get some kind of priority, absolute or relative, to applicants from places like Africa, Latin America, and Asia, except, let's say, perhaps the Far East and the Pacific, where things are a little bit different. But we really need to do that in name of all the principles that are in Article 2 of the of the bylaws, the core principles that are in the ICANN bylaws. And I repeat, I feel comfortable to say that because we have no interest, no customer, no stake there. But I really think that as a group, at the very least, we should say that.
And Jordan?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think maybe I don't know if I'm just repeating what you said, John, or maybe rephrasing slightly differently. I want to make sure we're all on the same page. This does seem like the exact sort of issue that NTAG was created to engage in, so it seems inevitable to me that we're going to want to make some sort of statement, and we're going to the extent we can use some time this week to make progress. I'm not sure we need to do it in a room of this size. But to the extent, you know, it's, whether it's Team 2 or some set of people that are interested in working on this issue, maybe we could identify them here, and those people could arrange to spend some time working the issue while we're here and get something ready for the group to consider by the time we have our next phone call.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good idea. If Team 2 could get together, perhaps, and if anyone wants to join Team 2 and be part of that discussion, that would be great. This is the kind of issue, though, in the past that we will have a hard time getting consensus on some issues. You know, everyone might have a different perspective of should someone go first, should geographic diversity play a bigger role, should IDNs play a bigger role, should geos play a bigger role, and whatnot. And we've historically, in our short history, have had a hard time reaching consensus on who goes first type issues, but we should try. Okay. Yeah, sure. So Team 2 is comprised of currently, and again, anyone could join, John Toland, Tom Brackey, John Style, Tim Switzer, Richard Tindall, Jordan Buchanan, Amanda Fessenden, and Anthony Vancouvering. If anyone else wants to join that group, with John not being here, perhaps Jordan, would you be willing to take the reins?
Yeah, I'd be glad to interim help out while John's not around
for
this week.
Okay, so contact Jordan if you want to join that group, and hopefully we could get together right after the session on this issue and see if we could reach consensus on something. Thank you. Okay, next issue on the agenda, the Trademark Clearinghouse URS. So we have just issued a comment. Is Elaine here on? Elaine's here. Great. So we just issued a comment on the clearinghouse, and I note that tomorrow or today?
Today.
Tonight is the deadline. 5 o'clock?
Oh, sorry.
No. But what time is are comments due on clearinghouse issues? Is it?
UTC midnight.
So we have just a few hours to file comments.
So again, just to reiterate what John said, I would encourage anybody, this is a very important topic. It's been discussed quite a bit. There is an alternative community model, you know, kind of consensus model out there. And so please feel free to go in and comment within the next couple of hours.
Yeah. So apparently, Phil, if you could hold on 1 second,
sure.
There's a problem with the chat room that people here, at least I, cannot see chat on the Adobe. So I apologize to anyone dialing in remotely who is trying to get in a queue or saying something on the chat. We just can't see that. So if we could rectify that, that would be great. If not, you might just have to do it via email or something like that. And I apologize, but I don't see the chat room here. Phil?
Yeah, thank you, John. I'll be brief. Phil Corwin, Counselor of the Internet Commerce Association. I just wanted to make sure people in this room are aware. We are members who are not just domain portfolio owners, but we have many members involved in various aspects of the new TLD program, thought it'd be useful to establish some principles for evaluating proposed substantive changes to both the Clearinghouse and URS. And we published this past Wednesday at both the internetcommerce.org website and at circleid.com 12 principles that we will be using to evaluate any proposed substantive changes. And of course, some of those changes could either delay the launch of the program or depress registration. So I just want to make everyone in the room aware that that's there to the extent that you find it useful and informs further discussion. I have gotten some very positive comments back from some individual applicants and want to make sure you all know it was out there. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. Jeff?
Thanks. This is Jeff Newman. I just want to give you an update on some of the recent developments in the Trademark Clearinghouse. As John said, or I don't know if he was the first one to say it, but or maybe it was Tim, there's a community consensus model that's been circulated around the ICANN community in the past several weeks. This was in response to the original model that was posted by ICANN on how the interaction works between the Trademark Clearinghouse and the registries and registrars. It's not on how the clearinghouse deals with trademark owners. That's kind of the front end stuff. There's plenty of sessions on that, and frankly, that's also being discussed within the community, but that's not the primary concerns that we have. So a bunch of us, ARI, Neustar, and VeriSign, and a number of others have gotten together and wrote a community consensus, used to be called alternate model, but it seems like this model has more support from the community, so we've now changed it to the actual consensus model. As you may know, there was a letter that was submitted from ICANN staff saying that they had a concern with the notion that this community consensus model had a live query component to it, meaning that the clearinghouse could be put into the path of registrations. And that was something that they had a concern about. I'm actually happy to note that there have been several meetings this week with high-level staff members as well as some board members, and they wanted to reassure us that nothing is off the table at this point, that the session today will help to flush out some of the issues and encourage everyone to participate. What's really needed are comments from the intellectual property community and the business community, because there are some concerns that we feel like we've addressed in the community consensus model that may not have been addressed in the ICANN model. And in order to kind of test our theories, some comments from the intellectual property owners and business constituency and others would really greatly help us in that cause. But I do want to say again that I'm very hopeful in the discussions that we've had, that nothing's off the table, that there were initially some misunderstandings from ICANN staff as to how our model actually worked. And when we talked to them about the mitigation techniques that we put in there to lessen the concerns, I think some of them were more comfortable. Again, it's an ongoing discussion, but I'm actually happy to report that the model that we have proposed, that the community, a lot of the community is endorsing, is not off the table, and encourage the dialogue to continue, and hopefully at 5 o'clock today.
Thanks, Jeff, and thanks for all your efforts on this issue on behalf of a lot of us. We really appreciate it, you and the other folks that are working on that community proposal. Richard.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify what Jeff just said for everyone's benefit. I think what Jeff said, so just jump in, and I'm just going to play it back real quick. What you're proposing is predominantly about technical implementation. So it's more about how the Trademark Clearinghouse works rather than what it does in terms of inputs and outputs.
That's exactly right. There's no changes to the guidebook on the policy. It's really just the interaction between the clearinghouse, clearinghouse, registries, registrars, and ultimately how the registrant gets the notice to acknowledge a claim, and how that acknowledgement is transmitted back through the registrars, through the registry, and back to the so that the trademark owners can be notified if a registration goes through. So it's kind of all the back end processes, but nothing about changes to policy or anything like that. The areas of concern or that we sought to address in our community consensus model was the notion that was expressed by intellectual property owners of making sure that the data that's within the clearinghouse is sufficiently protected and secure against data mining and others, because even if the information individually, you know, trademark information, could be obtained in a public manner, it's the collection of all of that information in one place which could be considered more of a trade secret that intellectual property owners had expressed to us and to ICANN, that the release or the bulk copy of all of the data would be of concern. So all of that still needs to be flushed out and tested with the IP owners and businesses to make sure we understand the concerns correctly and that our model, the consensus model, addresses those.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. So I encourage everyone to go to this session today at, as you said, 5 o'clock, and file comments if you could as well, per Elaine's instructions. URS is the other issue. We, in 4D, we had a... Oh, right, Karen Lentz, thank you.
Hey. Thanks, John.
This is Karen Lentz from ICANN staff. I just wanted to respond to a couple of points from the discussion that we just had. One is to actually clarify the public comment period that's open right now. So initially there were two explanatory memos posted, one on proof of use and one on the matching rules for the clearinghouse. And those are really both independent of what technical model you use on the registry side. So that's really what the comment period was aimed at. It's not a comment period, you know, you only have until today to comment on the model. The model, you know, the proposals that Jeff referenced and that people have been discussing in the weeks leading up to this meeting have been discussed in the community. They're being discussed at this meeting, so it's not, you don't need to, comment by today to have input into that. The second thing was just to say that, again, in reference to the session this afternoon, there was a letter sent from ICANN with the concern about one element about the live query piece of the proposal, which we thought was a key element that we wanted to respond to as quickly as we could. But I think the aspects of the model are to some extent separable. And what we wanted to communicate in the letter is that there are improvements that we see that can be made to the existing model that's out there, and that's really what we wanted to focus on during the session. So just wanted to add that. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Karen. Jeff?
Yeah, just to respond, but Karen, there will be discussions on both of the models at this 5 o'clock session, and so it's not just. I was assured that there would be ample time to discuss at this session as well as the session on Wednesday, not just how we can make the ICANN proposed model better, but how we as a community can address all of the concerns, whether it's the centralized or decentralized model that ultimately. Is selected. So I look forward to a constructive dialogue.
Sure, but it's the way it's set up, just to kind of prime it a little bit, is not a sort of model A, model B, let's compare. It's more about, actually along with the alternative proposals, there was a list of issues that was submitted. So we for example, customer support, or how do you do a registry-specific sunrise? So we're kind of looking at, trying to separate out those issues and talk about those.
Thanks, Karen. Jeff, a reply? Or?
I agree with Karen. There are some questions that that'll be addressed and at the 5 o'clock session that apply no matter which model is selected. So there are issues around land rush and other things that registries do when they launch and the timing of when notices go out. So I would really encourage everyone that's got an interest in this and that has feedback, and if there are a few minutes towards the end of this, I can go into the scenarios to give people a couple hours to think about it, to come to that meeting with thoughts on it, which may help. But I'll leave that to you all.
Yeah, okay. Well, when we hold that, Amadeo?
Okay, it's just about the clearinghouse, but not about the implementation of the clearinghouse, but about the agreement with the clearinghouse. And it's something I asked twice in Prague to the board, and I got silence only on as an answer. But there were rumors around saying that somehow the providers of the service were explaining to ICANN that because of the European Database Protection Directive, they would be the owners of the database. And the only answer we can provide as future registries is no way. We cannot create a monster that owns the database, which means not only that we cannot get rid of them, but we don't have any contractual or factual threat on them to behave, because they are the owners of the database. Indeed, we have that directive, but in Europe, you also have something called contracts that solve these issues. And I don't know whether Dan can expand on that information, but I think that beyond implementation issues, as future registries and the registry constituency should have a very clear stance about that we want a provider, but not the owner of that system. These should be ICANNs.
Okay. Ken?
Ken Stubbs, looking for a little clarity. I saw what appeared to be some semantic gymnastics with regard to what we're going to be accomplishing this evening. I would hope that what we're going to be doing is looking at the most effective methodology for moving forward, not trying to just take a plan which was originally presented to us by ICANN and make that specific plan work more effectively with respect to what they originally gave us. Okay.
Okay, thank you. So from an NTAG perspective, we already have comments in the queue on this and sent to ICANN. We'll encourage everyone to make these comments and these points at the actual session related to the clearinghouse. And if we, after that session, think that we need to do a follow-up from this organization on the clearinghouse, then we'll do so. So why don't we close out the clearinghouse issue at this point, and then we could talk about that later at the later session. URS, as everyone knows, we had a webinar a week or so ago on URS issues with a healthy dialogue with Kurt and Amy and others. And if anyone has any comments, questions on the status of the URS, that there's a session on Thursday. We don't, as a group, have any comments yet on URS issues since the webinar, but after Thursday, that perhaps something we'll discuss and whether we want to weigh in as an NTAG organization on URS issues. Okay. Next issue is we have a working group on the 1,000 per year limit on route delegation, and I think we have representatives from that organization or that working group here, Wayne, Richard, and Krista, and others. If you could give a report of where we are from an NTAG perspective on dealing with that issue, that would be really helpful. Thank you.
Thanks, John. So this is Richard Tindall. And so we've had this group together for the last 3 weeks, and I'll get the members to put their hands up quickly as I read their names because we actually haven't all met face-to-face yet, so we don't recognize some. So Alex Stamos, is Alex here? Wayne McLaurin is here. Put it way up so everyone can see who is. Krista Papik, Chris Wright, Michael Young, Warren Kumari, and myself, yeah. So in the last 3 weeks, we've focused mainly on trying to understand the problem, understand the issue, and that's mainly what I'm going to talk about today, rather than about solutions to it. We'll talk a little bit about solutions, but predominantly want the entire group to understand this issue. The first question is, why is it an important issue? By the way, I didn't need glasses when the program started, the TLD program started, but I certainly do now. So in a nutshell, the issue affects the time at which your TLD is likely to go live. And how much it affects that time depends on your draw number in the draw. But if you have a high draw number, then it's this issue of 1,000 limit per year could mean a 6 to 9 month delay in our calculation from when you enter the route and go live. And so it's a potentially significant issue depending on how urgently each of you wants to get into the route. I'm going to talk about this issue in a non-technical way, as I think most of the people listening are non-technical. I am not technical. But also, it's not really a technical problem. It's really a resourcing and coordination problem rather than a technical issue. So I'll just say that again because I think it's a very important point. It's not really a technical issue in terms of hard technical facts, but rather it's about resources and about coordination. So we'll talk for about 10 minutes. I think hold any questions and comments to the end, unless I say something that's patently wrong in your view, in which case, you know, please jump in. We've been working on this 3 weeks, and so it's possible we have things incorrect. So let me start with what the guidebook says. The guidebook says that no more than 1,000 TLDs will be delegated into the route annually. That means go live on the internet annually. The guidebook also says that the rate could be less than 1,000 if we find in practice that the entry of new TLDs adversely affects DNS performance. And so this whole system that we're going to talk about that inserts TLDs into the route, it also looks at the effects that they have on the various parts, and if that the effect is some sort of negative effect on performance, the 1,000 could be reduced. But there is a hard upper limit, so that phenomena doesn't work the other direction currently. If there's a problem, we will reduce it. If there's not a problem, the guidebook currently does not let us to increase the rate beyond 1,000. The guidebook does not, however, specify the rate in any given 12-month period at which those 1,000 are entered. So the 20 per week that we've seen in the current proposal is simply a mathematical derivation of 1,000 divided by 50 weeks-ish. The guidebook does not say 20 per week. Where did the 1,000 number come from? So ICANN asked its technical advisory groups, can the DNS system handle 1,000 new TLDs per year? And the answer of the technical advisory groups was, yes, it can, as long as you have a system in place to monitor the effect of the increases and throttle back if any problems emerge. We think that it's possible that if the question had been asked when it was asked several years ago, can the system handle 2,000 per year? It's possible that the answer could have been yes. And Kurt, please jump in, because you're the one asking the questions, if I misspeak on that. Yeah. It's important to note that when that question was asked a couple of years ago, it was influenced by the potential concurrent implementation at that time of two other things. New TLDs was one of them. The other two were IPv6 implementation and DNSSEC implementation. So when the question of 1,000 was asked, the folks that were answering it thought about it in the context of three things happening: IPv6, DNSSEC, and new TLDs. Today, if we were to ask the question again, it would really only be in the context of one of those three things, because DNSSEC and IPv6 have already been implemented. So a logical conclusion from that, we think, is that if 1,000 was acceptable 2 years ago, concurrent with IPv6 and DNSSEC, then today, without those two additional factors, it seems logical that a higher number would be responded to affirmatively. So where did the 20 per week number come from? As I just said, it's just a simple calculation saying 1,000 per year divided by approximately 50 weeks per year. That 20 per week number now in the current draw proposal now flows through to the other steps in the process, which are contract negotiation and pre-delegation testing, as well as the route entry, which I'll talk about what that is in a moment. So that 20 per week number has now flown from 1,000 into other parts of the process as well. So now I'll go into our understanding, the group's understanding of the actual situation and problem. And as I said earlier, we may be in error in some of the things I say here. We don't think we are, but it's certainly possible. Part of this session's purpose is to get feedback from people if we have got things wrong. We want to get feedback on that if we've made errors in either fact or conclusion. So there's really two parts of the system we're talking about here, two parts of the technical system that we're talking about. The first one is updates to the root zone file, and that's the process by which a registry initiates a change to a TLD. And the insertion of a TLD in the root for the first time is considered a change. So there's two ways a TLD can make a change: the actual insertion of that TLD into the root, and then any subsequent changes that the registry might want to make to their TLD. They would both be changes, if you like, to the root zone file. And the root zone file, of course, is the master file of all TLDs that function on the internet. And so when an update or a change is being made to the root zone file, there are four participating entities in that. The registry, of course, initiates the change. I'm not counting them. But then after that request is made, the participating entities are IANA, which is part of ICANN, the U.S. Department of Commerce, VeriSign, and then the 13 root name server operators located around the world. So they're the four sets of entities that manage this process. Again, it'll go from a registry operator, us. It'll go to IANA. It'll go to the Department of Commerce. It'll go to VeriSign. And it'll go then to the root server operators. So that's the first thing that we're talking about in a technical sense, changes and updates to the root zone file. The other thing that we're talking about is the actual query load on the root servers. So this, by this I mean the volume of lookup queries that are handled by the 13 root server operators. This is not changes to the file, this is queries coming from internet users. And so that load is increasing all the time as a result of increasing internet usage. And it may increase faster, that load of traffic, that may increase faster as a result of new TLDs as well. But the important point here is that it's already increasing rapidly. The ability of the root service to handle additional load is already an issue. I'm not saying it's a problem now, it's just something that those guys need to be aware of and their systems need to be able to deal with. New TLDs may add to traffic there. So let's talk about the first part of that first, the updates to the root zone file. I'm not talking about the traffic load now, we're talking about the actual file, the master file of the internet, with the master addressing file of the internet. So the management of that system at the moment is largely manual. It consists of relatively manual communications and interfaces between the four participants that I just spoke about. And the growth of the internet and the number of changes, and certainly the introduction of all of our TLDs, that's going to put a significant additional strain on the ability of that system to manage. That there's no doubt in our minds, in our subgroup, that as we look at these two technical components, one, the changes to the file, the other one, the actual amount of traffic query load on the servers, that the first of those two will certainly be affected by what we're all doing here. The second one, the traffic load, may or may not be affected. That's really a factor of how successful all of our TLDs are. So in that first system, which is largely manual, IANA, the Department of Commerce, and VeriSign are currently working to automate that system and build in systematic efficiency and quality assurance measures. So there's a project underway at the moment between those three parties to automate and improve the way that the root zone file is changed. That's happening now. We don't know a lot of details about that project, but we're trying to learn more. The second technical issue is the one of query load on the root servers. This is as a result of user traffic to our TLDs. And as I said before, this is increasing all the time. Root server operators need to resource up to meet that load. The root server operators are a diverse group, and so some of them, one of them, for example, is VeriSign. And so they are very well resourced to handle additional load as it occurs. Other operators are less resourced, and they may face resource challenges in meeting additional load. But that part of the problem, in our view, really isn't a new TLD problem as much as an overall internet usage issue. In our view, it's really more the former issue that the 1000 relates to, and that is the issue of updates and changes to the root zone file. So that's really a statement of the problem as we see it. Again, I think the most important conclusion that we've reached so far is that this is a resource and administration problem, not a technical problem. And so we didn't want to talk too much today about how to fix the issue, fix as in the goal of raising that number of 1,000 and accelerating the rate of root entry, but we do have some ideas which I'll put out now. One obvious one would be for ICANN to ask the technical advisory groups the question again. We can ask the question again, can the DNS system handle 2,000 TLDs per year? And they may say yes. We can ask, can the system handle 5,000 a year? And the answer could well be yes. we think that, and in fact, in talking to some of these people, we believe the answer from some of them would be yes. It's important to bear in mind this is a, there's not sort of one entity in charge of this whole thing. It's a fairly collaborative, decentralized thing, as the DNS is. So some might well say, yes, I can handle more than 1,000 per year. Some might say no. Our sense is that some would say yes to more than 1,000. Our sense is that the ones that say no, we can't handle more than 1,000, that the primary reason, if they were to say that, would be that they currently have inadequate resources to scale up to what they need to do. So again, not a hard technical barrier to doing this, but rather sufficient resources from each of these people to be able to meet the higher load. So that's kind of the summary of where we're at, John, and maybe we can open it now for questions and comments.
Yeah, we have, I'll take a cue. We have a question online already. Liz Williams asks, Richard, is there a definition of the problems, quote unquote, that may arise and how they would be handled? Is there any possibility of foreseeing problems now and addressing before pre-delegation testing?
Hi, Wayne McLaurin here. I mean, most of the problems are going to be around the scaling stuff. IANA and the NTIA are working on, I guess, and ICANN, are working on a process to automate the system they have in place now. It was a 9-month program. By all accounts, it's on schedule. So I think that will take care of a lot of those issues, and then it'll be mostly the feedback loop of how successful they are at pushing new changes out to see whether or not we can actually accelerate it at that point. But the other real changes will be more of a question for the root server operators, is that who is running into resource contention already in terms of overall growth, which we can certainly ask the question.
Let me add something there that I perhaps should have mentioned earlier. The number of TLDs and the size of the file is far less important to these folks than the frequency of changes. That's what's really the issue at stake here. The 1,000 number, in a sense, is a proxy for how many likely changes they think they're going to see. At the moment, for example, there's 300-ish TLDs in the root, and I believe there's about 440 changes to the file per year. So I'm assuming, we don't know this, so this is an assumption for the record, that they've done some math in their heads about 1,000 and what that would mean in terms of the number of changes. But to illustrate my point, if there were 1 million TLDs in the root, but there were only a limited number of changes per year, then that would be much less impactful. This is about the frequency of change rather than the number of TLDs. And please step in if I'm wrong.
No, that's
there.
Right.
Jordan?
Yes, so two questions. The first relates actually specifically to this particular topic. So have you guys talked with folks about the effect on caching in particular, that what that would happen as a result of fragmentation in the root, and everyone's confident that's not a factor in root scaling?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, there's been a couple studies done. ICANN released one this summer that was done by the technical groups. And then about 3 years ago, DNSORC did a study for ICANN about scaling the root for exactly those reasons, the introduction of new TLDs plus IPv6 and DNSSEC. DNSSEC actually has a bigger impact because it changes the size of the responses. But their studies are basically that, well, yes, there are some limits when you start hitting millions of TLDs, but sort of the difference between 300 and, you know, an order of magnitude bigger, 3,000 is negligible for that footprint. And it's mostly also because the if you look at the distribution of query types and the queries, it's so heavily weighted towards CommonNet already that a lot of the other stuff is just not, it becomes noise. And now, that may change if somebody's, you know, very, very successful in this, but that's sort of where we're looking at right now.
Great, thanks. And the other quick question I have is actually touches on the other factor you mentioned, which is DNSSEC. I don't think you guys mentioned the DNSSEC record insertion, key signing, and so on as part of the delegation process right now. But my understanding is that process today, like getting key signed in for use in the root, are basically, it's complete. It's not just manual, it's face-to-face.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's, to a lot extent, it depends on the policies of the registry.
We're talking about delegating into the root itself, right?
Yes.
Like, those keys have to be signed by the root key, right?
Yes.
And all that signing today is done basically face-to-face, as I understand things.
Correct. But, again, you're looking at, in the case of the new TLDs, the vast majority of them are being handled by existing registry providers who already have those relationships in place.
Sure. I'm just wondering if there has to be one face-to-face meeting per delegation in order to actually cause the keys to get signed.
It's a good question. I don't know. I'm not sure how that process will work.
That's certainly something we should explore.
Yeah.
Okay, Tim?
Oh, sorry, Richard.
No, I was just saying, Krista's capturing all these questions that we... So this is great feedback.
Tim?
Tim Switzer. I guess to kind of just get this, you know, directly... potentially, I guess, answered as far as where we are. Let me ask Kurt. I mean, this issue's been out there for a while. Is the $1,000 a year set in stone, not being looked at? Is it being looked at today? And if it's not being looked at today, could it potentially be looked at? I mean, what's the status right now?
So I'm not the expert in this. Clearly, clearly the $1,000 a month number was arrived at over a long period of discussion as a way to open the $1,000 a year.
Done deal.
Is that? So the $1,000 a year was arrived at after a long period of discussion. That was part of the negotiating that was done to launch the process. I think what I've heard, but what you'd want to affirm is that the best way to increase that rate, if you're going to explore it, is what I think you just said, is as you delegate and monitor and see no effect and see the ability of the delegating parties to handle a load, that's the avenue toward increasing the rate, not from $1,000 a year to something else per year, but just increasing the per month rate, because what could potentially be done is ramp up. But, and I'm repeating that from input in public sessions I've heard from members of the technical community, that, you know, the proof will be when we start delegating. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens to the root zone. We'll see how the provisioning parties deal with the load, and can build on that. So that, you know, you can belt and suspenders is do something now, send some queries to the technical community and see how that goes. But what I've heard from them is we should see how we should monitor how the delegations go and see if there can be an increase at that point.
So if you started at 20 a week and started ramping up to 30 or 40, that doesn't mean you're going to stop once you hit a magic number of 100 in 9 months or however long that takes.
Yeah, so the batching model, or whatever it's called, is you know, 20 a week or 80 a month or something like that, and it's not going to get bigger than that without, you know, some acceptance from all the people in the technical community that you just described. So it's sort of baked in that it's going to be, you know, 80 something a month.
Ken.
First of all, thank you, Richard, for dumbing it down for people like me. I'm a little confused about something. First of all, it would appear to me, based on what Richard said in discussions that we had, that the ultimate, I won't say problem, but this is going to end with the root server operators. And we're talking about it depends on whether or not they have the resources. Well, maybe what we need to do is to be a little bit more proactive. Let's engage with the root server operators. Let's find out whether or not they have, in their opinion, adequate resources to scale out. If they don't, let's identify the problems and see if there's any way that we can provide resources to them. Because in discussions that I've had with some of the root server people, it's not the primary operator, but basically now I'm getting over my head, so help me out. But these guys are relying on, I guess you would call it like Anycast, to help people to broadcast this out. And they're concerned about the potential in their own individual networks of this being able to be managed efficiently. So maybe we need to do a little more discussion with these guys, number one. And number two, let's be very careful about the way that we discuss the use of the data. On one hand, we're talking about the significant increase in traffic on the internet over the last 3 years. On the other hand, we're relying on numbers that were probably developed in studies that were done using data 3 years old. So let's try to bring it up to a level where it makes more sense so that we can argue that we're not dealing with historical data that's out of date. And at the same point in time, let's try to engage this group of 13 people and find out where it stands. I'm not worried about VeriSign. I understand that, and a lot of the operators have more than adequate resources. But if there are issues somewhere, here's the way I figure it. In education, they tend to teach down to a level that they feel that they are understood at. If the root server operators work at a system where they will scale it at a level that they're comfortable with, that level may very well be significantly below the resources of the guys that we're always using as examples. So let's find out where that level is, see if we can get that level moved up to the point where everybody suddenly becomes a lot more comfortable with whatever number we have. Thank you.
Yeah, John, I'll just respond. Yeah, so yeah. Everything you said then makes sense to me, Ken. And the goal here would be for this group, if we agree on that sort of approach and solution, that we do it as a group, because it'll be more effective, I think. Another thing for everyone to be aware of, however, is that the root server operators aren't under contract with anyone, as far as I'm aware. So it's a collaborative thing, absent agreements. So there's no contractual relationships that I'm aware of where you can exert pressure on them via contract. It's got to be a kind of voluntary work together kind of thing, is my understanding. If I'm wrong about that, please someone jump in.
Can I respond very quickly to that? Understand that there's no contractual relationship. That does not mean that there don't exist the opportunities for good lines of communication. And, you know, I appreciate the fact they may be stuck over somewhere, and I won't call it an ivory tower, but these guys are on top of these issues. People like Lars Lehman and so forth, they know what's going on out here. And then maybe it's a matter of not just making assumptions based on past behaviors, but enhancing communication with these people. That's all.
Yeah, thank you, Ken. So, you know, this group that we have, this work team, the next steps are to do a little more outreach and then to see if there's some kind of statement that this group can make based on your outreach, I presume. Is that right? Okay, so we should be looking for, if there are no other comments on the issue, we should be looking for the group to continue its work, continue its outreach, and then come back to the larger organization with perhaps a draft of a statement or something that we should be doing as a whole group.
Yeah, and as with all the subgroups of NTAG, as John said earlier, if anyone wants to join this group and can contribute to it, please feel free. If you're an existing NTAG member or if you're planning to join and you're knowledgeable on this topic, please let us know and join the group.
That's great. Thank you, Richard. Okay, so we have about 15 minutes left for any other business, and I wanted to open it up for any dialogue or any questions or anyone, especially prospective members or, you know, existing applicants who aren't members of NTAG, might have about the organization. If you have any questions, any feedback, anything you've heard today that you like, don't like, feel free to come to the mic and talk through it. Keith?
Okay. Thank you, John. Keith Drazik with VeriSign. I'm the alternate chair of the Registry Stakeholder Group. I just wanted to take a minute to commend you all and congratulate you for the excellent work that you all have been doing, that the NTAG has been doing over the last several months. I think it's the energy and the expertise that you as a group have brought together here and, quite frankly, have contributed to the registry stakeholder group as a whole has been very valuable. And I just wanted to just basically say that we really appreciate your participation, your input. I look forward to continuing to work with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Keith. That's very nice. And we look forward to working with you as the new chair of the registry stakeholder group. So congratulations on that. Tim, then Jeff, and Dirk. Tim Switzer, just one comment that probably should I maybe should have mentioned earlier, just a little bit of housekeeping here. There is an NTAG budget. We do have an approved budget as a subset of the registry stakeholder budget. So that's just informational for those of you that weren't aware of that. I would also encourage those of you that have been working with NTAG that may have incurred any legitimate NTAG expenses to please. I remind this every 2 weeks, but I'm just reminding again here in person to please, you know the process. We've sent it out. Please submit that to me. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Jeff?
Yep, thanks. Jeff Newman again. I'm also one of the counselors for the GTLD Registries stakeholder group, and I thought Keith would make it, but I'll make a pitch. You are all observers to the registry stakeholder group as well, and so we have a meeting all day tomorrow where some of these issues will be discussed, some of the ones we talked about, but also kind of the steady state registry issues, which although may not impact you at the moment, will certainly impact you in the next few months, hopefully, and we'll be optimistic. So, you know, I know you have a lot to think about now, but I encourage everyone to take the opportunity to come to the registry stakeholder group, listen, participate, because you will be with us shortly.
How big is the room? How big is the room?
It's the biggest room, I think, for the stakeholder group. So.
No, the main room. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Dirk.
Yeah, we have a quite smaller room, Dirk Krzyzanowski from Dot Berlin. We are meeting with applicants for geographical names, top-level domains, at 3 o'clock in two stairs beyond this in Dockside 5. And you're welcome if you're a geographical name applicant to join our group there.
Thank you, Dirk. Bill.
Bill Dozier took an email from our friend John Tolan of Dot Irish, and it kind of hits on what we're about with NTAG. This is a great group and a lot of participation, and John's comment was it's just good to him to hear some input from the European applicants, and obviously he and all of us would like to hear more from both the European applicants and everybody, and then also input from other ICANN regions, because we want to get as much input, as much membership as we can. And then he also adds, as well as participation regarding the upcoming NTAG executive elections. And I don't know if I agree with that or not. But
okay. Thank you, John and Bill. Any other comments, thoughts, any other business? Krista? Okay, so we'll call the meeting adjourned. Look at to see. Okay, one. Thank you. One last reminder: if you're a member, please vote on this charter amendment so we could get the necessary votes to get this issue done and the terms and everything else. So, but thank you, everyone. Copy the newsletters in the back. Thanks for everyone for coming, and I appreciate it. And we'll see you at the next one. Bye.